This is Jess Goldson, and you are listening to CJRU 1280 AM here in Toronto. This story, The Politics of Being a Black Youth, the fourth of four episodes in the series titled Waves of Knowing, is part of the Local Journalism Initiative, a project by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. The previous stories in the series covered assisted reproductive technologies, in vitro fertilization, or IVF, and egg donation, and womb and pelvic health. Today, we will explore support for Black youth in education and mental health services. Kiri Daniel is co-founder and board member of Parents of Black Children. Parents of Black Children is an advocacy group formed to support and advocate on behalf of Black students and their parents to address and dismantle anti-Black racism and systemic barriers within the education and adjacent systems. Daniel explains a few of the ways Parents of Black Children supports families.
As long as Black people have been engaged with the education system, there have been community groups who've been helping to support Black families within the education system. What we did is we merged that idea and that community grassroots work with systems navigation that happens in other sectors and created this role, a formalized version of the role. We do something called system navigation, where we will stand beside parents who their child might be experiencing any number of barriers that we know that Black children experience in the education system. So whether it's teachers telling them that their kids need to be on an IEP or an independent education plan, or streaming them out of specialized programming like French immersion, all of those things, we will hold people's hands, go to meetings, write letters to the principal, letters to the board. If they need legal supports, we will connect them with legal supports, support them through a process of filing a human rights claim. And then the third thing we do is we call it capacity building, but it's really about equipping families and parents with the tools and the language to navigate the education system. So teachers have their own language in terms of how they speak. And there are also so many policies and procedures and things that people didn't even know that they could do to advocate for their kids, like the fact that a report card grade is not final. We do a lot of workshops so that families have that knowledge.
Daniel outlines some of the recent improvements Parents of Black Children has made in education equity in Ontario regarding their demands.
We have 10 demands that you can find on our website. We're asking for the elimination of all streaming to decolonize the curriculum. The provincial government has announced that they are going to start de-streaming grade 9, starting with grade 9 math. What we're saying is, great, thank you, but people have been asking for decades to end streaming, and it's not enough to just say we're starting with grade 9 math. It needs to stop, full stop. It's hard to advocate when you're part of a system and you're afraid to lose your job. What we're asking the province is to create education system navigation roles everywhere. And what they've done is they call it student and family advocates. They've released some money through the Black Youth Action Plan to create student and family advocates. And that, I think that rolled out last week. And there are about 17 organizations who have funding. Parents of Black Children is one of them for these student and family advocate positions, which are essentially system navigation. The fifth demand is around police-free schools province-wide. I would say some of the boards in the province have taken steps towards getting police out of schools. Many have not. And it's an ongoing conversation. Accountability for teachers through the Ontario College of Teachers. And the collection of race-based data is the next one. We just released an anti-Black racism reporting tool for educators, where educators can go on and just report any kind of anti-Black racism that they experience or that they see. That's a win. In the summer, we held a march, and it was the first march for Black students in Toronto. We held that in August, and as demand number 7 was around accountability for teachers. And a few months later, there was a change in the Ontario College of Teachers. The ministry had made it a requirement where any kind of racism or discrimination is now considered malpractice. It's professional misconduct. And there are consequences for that. And it's a shift, not just for Black kids. It means that, you know, queer kids are protected. Any kind of racialized group, now teachers can be responsible and held accountable for perpetuating any kind of racism or discrimination against any group now.
Daniel describes the impact that COVID-19 has had on learning and equity in the virtual classroom.
What we see is that the pandemic has really highlighted our pandemic. For Black kids, there's a crisis in the education system. They're not getting an equal education, and they're not accessing a peaceful education because there's so many barriers. So that's our main concern. It's really, how do we make sure that the boards and schools continue to push for our children, even through a pandemic? The barriers to accessing equitable education for Black kids are the same during the pandemic as when there isn't a pandemic. I think for many, online learning has been a bit of a reprieve for Black kids because it means that their behavior is not being policed. My son's a great example. He's 10 and thrived in an online learning environment. His grades actually went up, and he's lucky in the sense that we're able to provide technology for him and we're able to provide a quiet environment. Not all kids have that, but for many Black children, being home meant they weren't being policed in the same way that they are when they're at school. The pandemic, we know, has hit racialized communities hard, communities that are experiencing poverty hard. Those two groups are not always the same, but I think access to technology is a big concern, and also mental health. You know, Parents of Black Children, we launched a mental health fund because we were seeing that people really needed support in the area of mental health, particularly now during the pandemic. And the amount of people that came forward for help exceeded the support that we could provide. We weren't expecting that. We didn't anticipate that. But it's very clear that those are needs within the community. I will say, though, that, you know, for kids, for Black kids, the barriers are the same. As long as they're in school, whether it's a pandemic or not, they have higher suspension rates. Children as young as junior kindergarten, as soon as they come in, they're streaming starts at that age, right? Like, it's separating kids out, putting them on a separate carpet, targeting their behavior, giving them harsher punishments for something when other kids who do the same thing don't get those punishments. Even looking at the grading, you know, how hard does a Black child have to work to get an A versus another child? Because grading is so arbitrary in our education system. So all of those things don't change because there's a pandemic. I sat in my son's principal's office at his school, and I brought my mother to that meeting, and we sat in that meeting, and I'm watching my mom, and she's having this conversation with the principal, asking her to stop targeting my son and leave him alone, this Black child, leave this Black child alone. And I'm looking at her, and I know that 30 years prior, she had sat in the office of my school principal having the exact same conversation. And for me, every time I talk about Parents of Black Children, that's the moment I go back to, because I think that can't happen for my kids. I don't want my son in 30 years to be sitting there with his child talking about these issues. Enough is enough.
Dr. Fatima Jackson Best is a project manager with the Black Health Alliance and Pathways to Care, a project that supports improvements to mental health and addictions care for children and youth. Jackson Best explains the barriers to care COVID-19 has created for Black youth.
My main concern is lack of access to services, particularly virtual services. We know that, like, due to the pandemic, people are not able to do face-to-face service provision as much in most cases. A lot of it has gone online, same way that everything has gone online. But we do know that Black youth specifically, who are most at risk for falling through specific cracks as it relates to mental health and addiction services, are youth who are also low income. And low income means a host of things. And it also can mean that, you know, people don't have access to the internet or strong Wi-Fi or safe spaces in their homes, privacy in their homes where they're able to engage in the care that they need. Especially in the beginning of the pandemic, I often thought it's awkward enough for me when I have to sit down with, like, my therapist, right, who I engage with for, like, mental health, you know, just maintenance. But, you know, imagine if you are dealing with, like, a really serious mental health condition and you're not able to have that face-to-face encounter. And worse yet, you don't even have the internet capacity or bandwidth to engage with your therapist. In the beginning of the pandemic, one of our partners in a meeting said that their agency went from seeing something like 2,000 youth to a couple of hundred in the span of a couple of months. So anecdotally, we know that, you know, Black youth are not able to access treatment and care, and they already were having issues accessing treatment and care before the pandemic. And in so many ways, this pandemic has altered our lives. So, you know, I have no doubt, unfortunately, that this is going to have impacts on the landscape of mental health care provision in the province and across the country for Black youth and for Black communities overall, right?
A systematic review is a systematized literature review that uses a research question to assess the quality and quantity of a particular field of knowledge. And a scoping review is an approach to a systematic review which focuses on the breadth of a topic using a research question, but it doesn't go into the depth of the question.
We did a scoping review at Pathways to Care, and we found several different barriers, and most of the barriers were reflected at like the systemic level, the practitioner level, and also personal or community related barriers. So in terms of like systemic barriers, we saw that hospitalization and the juvenile justice systems were the main access points to care for Black children and youth. And that's a systemic issue because we know that, for example, the justice system itself can be very, very violent and even deadly towards Black people, including Black youth. Our work found that 23% of Black youth were introduced to mental health care treatment through the police, which is very concerning. And in, with regard to hospitalization, Black youth who had that entry point into mental health services often felt regretful about seeking treatment, and that was usually associated with less follow-up.
Jackson Best describes barriers to mental health and addictions care for Black youth. This is not an exhaustive list.
We saw that racism and discrimination was a barrier. Also, lack of anti-Black racism or anti-racism theory into action was a barrier. And also lack of organizational support for certain health practitioners was a part of the problem. Additionally, we know that wait times are longer for Black children and youth. There are more financial barriers, less access to practitioners, particularly practitioners who are Black or who look like Black youth in terms of race or even sexuality. It's very difficult. And then geographic barriers. And then in terms of like the personal barriers, there's a lot of stigma that also prevented Black youth from receiving the mental health and addictions care that they need. Stigma from their providers, cultural stigma or stigma within the community, and also religious stigma. So the idea that if you have a mental illness or if you're having mental health challenges, it's an indication of weak faith. So those are definitely some of the other barriers that our work at Pathways to Care uncovered through a systematic review of the existing literature. Our work really looks to intervene at a systems level through our policy advocacy piece, but also on a practitioner basis, right? And on a community level, we're looking to intervene to basically help or assist, to assist service providers to, you know, properly engage with and serve Black children and youth and their families.
Although there are barriers to care, it is important to highlight the facilitators to care.
Some of those included religion, which I mentioned that could actually be a barrier. All of the facilitators actually can go both ways, but some youth identified religious spaces as being a comfortable place to seek support. That can be a particular facilitator to care and a lever for change, as well as family and friends and mental health providers were also highlighted as potential facilitators for care. Family involvement typically leads to more treatment and engagement and less dropout rates. And so it really speaks to the need for more therapists who are low cost or free. We need to have mental health as a part of our OHIP. We should all have free access to high quality mental health care at whatever age we may be, whether we're children, youth, adolescents, adults, elderly people, etc. Our mental health continues with us in our entire lives and it fluctuates. And things like a pandemic, which most of us did not predict, it has huge impacts on our lives. And there are so many people out there who have no one to talk to about the anxieties, the fears, the negative experiences that they've been having over the past year because they simply don't have, you know, the cash or the income to have that. And it should not be a privilege. I think mental health absolutely is a right of all, for all of us, regardless of color, culture, religion, et cetera, gender identity. Real sustainable change to me looks like having access to mental health care as a part of our rights as Canadians, same way that we have access to some primary health care, but also, you know, that we have mental health care providers that reflect our cultural, racial, ethnic religious backgrounds as well.
This is Jess Goldson, and you've been listening to CJRU 1280 AM here in Toronto. This story, The Politics of Being a Black Youth, the fourth of four episodes in the series titled Waves of Knowing, is part of the Local Journalism Initiative, a project by the Community Radio Fund of Canada.